Greetings. Welcome to Badger Wish Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Gilliland, and we've got a great show tonight. We're actually at the eSETI conference, and we have a whole lineup of guests here. And I think we're going to do something, I don't know if it's ever been done before, it probably has, but we're going to have three hosts here and interviewing some incredible speakers. And so I'm here, and we've got Brooks Agnew on my left.
Thank you, James. Good to be here at the eSETI Ranch having a conference with a bunch of close friends and, well, about 200 close friends, right? And you're joining us here tonight on As You Wish Radio. I'll give the mic back to James.
All right, and we've got another host with us, and this will blow your minds. We've got the infamous Mel Fabregas here with us as our triple host show tonight.
I don't think this has ever been done in the history of radio broadcasting, so I'm honored. So let's do it.
All right. So we've got all kinds of speakers here. I think we'll bring Neil Kramer up here first. He happens to be sitting here ready to go and see what Neil has to say for us. And maybe, you know, I'll just start off with a question, and if the other hosts have a question, we can shoot and put all our minds together and see what we can bring out. But without any further ado, here's Neil Kramer to tell us about his experiences here at eSETI, and just gave an awesome talk. I mean, standing ovation. It was amazing. So without any further ado, here's Neil.
Hey, James. Thank you. Hi to the listeners. It's great to be here. Well, I came here last year, and it was awesome, and I think it's an even bit more awesome this year. So the quality of the speakers, we've still got, you know, a day and a half, 2 days to go with that, but up to now, the quality of the speakers has been absolutely first class. So before me this morning, there was yourself, James, brilliant talk by Jason Verbelli, and everybody's really going to be on top performance, so I gave my talk, and then Chanja gave her talk, so I think everybody's had to raise the game, basically, which is really good. And, you know, it's funny, I'm always surprised how things link together from every discipline and every talk that we give. And there were so many points that connected each talk to the next. And although we're all approaching it from different perspectives and different disciplines, they all seem to create a sense of space, not least of which the audience participate in as well. So it really is an opportunity for people to listen to some great speakers, but also, as ever, what goes on off the stage in the surrounding environment, in this beautiful, pristine, you know, wilderness environment is just really first class. So last night out on the field was a lot of fun, having conversations with people, sharing people's stories, and it's very clear to me that everybody who's come here has made a journey. And I think we've all kind of acknowledged that. And again, you know, we've said these things before, but it never ceases to hearten me how deep those journeys are, how true they are, how interesting they are. And I think selfishly for me, the big win coming to a place like this is what I learn, what I take away, what upgrades I get. So I just hope that along the way, I, you know, pass a few little gems onto other people. So, yeah, it's been excellent. And it was a great day today. I sweated my guts out on that stage. I was nearly drowned in my own moisture. But I hope sort of between that and wiping my brow, you know, people enjoyed it. They seemed to do so. No, it was totally, totally awesome. So, yeah, it was a great day today.
Neil, I got a question. In your presentation, where you're talking about sort of a crescendo of consciousness going on in world society, not just in the U.S., but also in England, where it seems like, you know, people have had enough. What do you see in society? What do you see them having enough of, and what do you see them doing about it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that when you speak to, you know, your colleagues and friends and peers in the spiritual or the esoteric or the alternative community, you can be forgiven for sort of existing in a little bubble and just talking to each other about all the things in the world and having this very high-quality conversation. And sometimes you run the risk of ignoring the mainstream and the politics the military, corporate maneuvers and things like that. For me, seeing friends and family who exist solely in the mainstream, to be honest, without judgment they do, to see them criticize the authorities and to see them reach out for solutions, I've never seen that at this level before. I've seen one or two people do it, clearly we all do throughout our lives, and people surprise you and step out of the sort of little box, the little, you know, metal box of the mainstream. But the numbers of people doing that and the people reaching out to these esoteric practices, some of the things Chen Zhao was talking about, some of the esoteric mysticism that I mentioned, people are prepared to take that gamble because they don't want to just feel that their vote is their only power anymore. I don't believe it is a power. I don't believe it ever was. And I think people are kind of gaining the control and the authority and the power in their own lives to say, there is something deep going on. I think it is a spiritual journey. And as you yourself have mentioned a couple of times, people are fed up with just hearing the articulation of the problem. They want solutions work. So we need that on every level. We need to hear about new science. We need to hear about new technologies. We need to hear about ancient traditions of healing that have been with us for thousands of years. But the beauty of this event is you get an opportunity to synthesize that all in one place. And I often feel when I come to this place that everybody's at some kind of crossroads. And I think you often meet people at that point here. And so we all have, as speakers, have a responsibility to respect that because there's people at all different levels. But the message and the sort of focus and the discipline is the same. So whether you're talking to someone who's been on the path, as we might say, for 50 years or someone who's been on it for 5 minutes, you speak to them with the same authenticity and the same sort of respect that you would for anybody else. So for me, that raises my game because it means I have to modify the language but still keep the punch behind it. So as I said today, it's not just what you're saying, it's how you're saying it, and I think that's increasingly important.
So when you talk about the mainstream of society happily floating down the mainstream in their inner tubes holding hands and drinking Mai Tais, you're seeing a greater faction of society realizing that the river is headed for the sewer and they're starting to paddle upstream. So we're ready for what, a spiritual revolution?
I don't shy away from that word. I use the word rebellion today, spiritual rebellion, but it's the kind of rebellion that we see many times. And it's like a peak. You know, we've gone through a trough, a sort of negative polarity shift. We've gone through the Kali Yuga, whatever, however you want to put it. But not only is that wave coming back up again, but it's a sort of cosmic wave. It's an even bigger peak than normal. And I think you can just sense that and see that. We're going to learn more about that from Renato when he delivers his information and his message. But you can just feel it. You can feel it on the street and you can see it positively in the faces of people who are seeking truth and knowledge and growth. And you can see it negatively in the faces of David Cameron, Angela Merkel, and Barack Obama, and Mitt Romney, and so on. You can see it. You can see how empty and what a charade it is. And it's kind of funny. As long as you can retain a sense of humor and don't get too disheartened by it, to watch Mitt Romney vie for the hearts and minds of 300 million Americans is hilarious to me.
Neil, we all hear the word apathy, not only in the United States, but in Europe and abroad. Do you think the word apathy is now being changed and people are finally to the point where they realize that their vote does not count? And if that's the case, what is the next step? What is the change? How is change really going to occur if we transition from apathy to action?
Wow, these are great questions. Oh, my gosh. No, honestly, it's really important that people frame it in those terms because you can't always just speak in the abstract. You have to be practical sometimes. I mean, I used a phrase today that there is one party, one political party that always has been from Egypt to Rome to Britain to America. It's one party, and you either vote for that one party or you don't. So I agree that withdrawing your vote, contrary to what many patriotic Americans and Europeans and Britons might think is actually quite a powerful statement. If nobody turns out to vote, imagine what that would do. So politically, that's a move. I also think that you do have a top-down and a bottom-up approach in that you have to create community. You can't just adapt what's there. You have to create it. And there's a model of that is here, because as well as the community of East SETI, you also get these branch-offs and these micro communities of other people who go out after being here, who form discussion groups and forums, who go into their societies and their friends and family and say, you know what, there's all these new technologies that this guy shared with us, where we can generate power, where we can look at technologies that we can own that don't require money and don't require any sort of tethering to utility companies and stuff. That's powerful. That's practical. For me, always, it really goes down to consciousness. And now that's kind of like almost getting a bit like an old word nowadays. But that is where it starts. So if you have the conviction and the faith that you can create whatever you need to create, that does start to have an effect. And, you know, not just in your thoughts, but in your actions and your deeds and the way you interact with people, what you choose not to do as well, the things that you don't believe in, the kind of work that you might not believe in, just, you know, the Buddhist principle of right, you know, action, basically, of like not doing certain things. And living, again, with a rather old-fashioned word, but I quite like, with honour, to say my personal honour is not going to be affected by people, even in government and in the Senate and in Parliament, who act with dishonour. So even to detach yourself from that way of thinking starts to physically change your reality. And as, you know, I've mentioned before, and I know one or two people share this story in this room, moving away from the corporate world, and moving into a completely different way of self-determining, independent, sovereign life, I have achieved and seen that move in my life. And I think anyone can do it. It's not hugely technically, administratively difficult. It's a motion of consciousness. And if you can have the faith to do that and reach out and do it, you find that the universe will support you. It needs to see some effort. You can't just sit in your living room hoping that everything's going to be okay. You have to try. But like a good teacher, when the universe sees you making the effort, it reaches out to you, it can see you, and it starts to support you with synchronicity, with connections, with lucky breaks, with meeting wonderful people, with getting business opportunities, with drawing some sort of income from the things you love and from the philosophy and the information and the knowledge and the space you hold. You know, you share those things, you derive some sort of resource from it that helps you become independent. So detaching from the mainstream is largely about gaining total resilience to any outside system. You become totally sovereign in a very practical way.
Neil, I like this idea of sovereignty that you're breaking into. You know, it's interesting, the Department of Interior of the U.S. has issued a statement that no one should be feeding the animals in the wild, because if we do, the animals will not learn to be self-sufficient. They'll learn to depend on handouts. And yet, the HHS is now at unprecedented level of food stamps giving to people all across America. And I guess they're not afraid that we become dependent and not able to fend for ourselves. But it seems to be a global problem. I see it in Greece, I see it in Spain, I see it in many of the European communities. They're all standing in line waiting for a handout. How do we break out of a society of dependence to a society of sovereign beings able to fend for ourselves?
Oh my gosh, if anyone asks another brilliant question, I am going to just leave this room. Really important point. I think, you know, if you look at it politically, and I know if you listen to right-wing radio, somebody is actually handing me a beer now. If you listen to political radio and you listen to the sort of Rush Limbaughs and the, you know, Michael Savages of this world, and in Portland we have a guy called Lars Larson. If you listen to those right-wing commentators, they will say the solution is to go back to the Founding Fathers' vision of things, which is total independence, total resilience and stuff. But it isn't really independence. It flips around and they think that it gets away from some of the socialist dogma that Obama has brought into America. It's difficult to argue that now. But it flips around the other way, which is you end up with cartels and you end up with gangster capitalism, which is rife in England at the moment and in Europe and particularly Scandinavia. That's the flip side. That's bad. The model for enlightened centre-right-wing politics, Scandinavia, is really struggling right now. It's really not a good place to be. Very high taxation, very restricted way of life, gulags, kind of masquerading as apartment complexes. It's not good. It doesn't work. So you can't go back to what was here in the 1890s and the 1920s. You have to create something new. And for me, that does largely mean decentralization, and it does mean largely, local empowerment, and the more local, the better, basically. So I would love to see a Europe and an America with, thousands upon thousands of little independent, self-sustaining villages. I think that is a solution.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's an awesome vision to hold. I think it's amazing about the guests and the speakers I have here is because I have all these things I want to say, but we only have an hour and a half. But the really cool thing is that all the guests and that come here to do their talks say everything for me, So we all seem to share. We have this like mind and this deep service-oriented philosophies and putting them into action here as well. And I really love seeing that all of us hitting it from different angles and kind of exposing the beast from 10 different angles. And so we can actually do something about it and actually giving solutions to dealing with, this beast of whatever you want to call it, greed and the unbridled greed and uneven dispersal of wealth and all the things that are going on. Which, again, I don't want to fall into a victim role, but these are all reflections within ourselves to one degree or another. But, we need to step up to the plate now and stand tall and stay in our own power and address these issues. We can't just shove them under the rug and ignore them any longer because the energies that are coming in right now are not conducive to denial. I think the Nile's been dammed up for far too long, and it's about ready to get blown wide open. But anyway, we've got all kinds of people waiting here to let's bring Jason on. And we've got Jason Verbelli, and he's talking about all kinds of amazing new energy concepts coming out. And we'll give the floor over to Jason.
Thank you very much, James, and thank you, Mel, and thank you, Brooks. Also, want to thank the listeners and the people gathering here at eCity. I have met some of the most brilliant and open-minded people. Now, when I gave my presentation earlier today, I was expecting to deliver a bunch of concepts and methodology for energy generation, thinking that nobody had heard anything about this type of stuff before. And to my surprise, most of these people were readily accepting it, had their own ideas about it, and were quite familiar with these ideas. So what I'm finding is that the skepticism is dying down, and we're seeing less ridicule and more acceptance throughout the fields in science and throughout spirituality practices. And there's more people realizing the validity in this, and the resistance is beginning less and less and less when we're talking about these different methods and different forms of energy. Now, my whole deal is just trying to provide information to people that is already out there that might not be found in libraries or universities, but they're available by talking to individuals and by creating individual freedom from within, because nobody is going to force you to become free or force you to adopt a certain mentality. And it's up to us as individuals to gather with each other and try to marry these ideas in ways that we can apply today. And the things that I study, like the work of Walter Russell, who was good friends with Nikola Tesla, the work of John Keeley or Professor John Searle, and all these wonderful ancient and old forms of energy that are just not being focused on. So my whole deal is just to try to provide information to people that they might not have encountered before, and to show how these things work in context, and to provide enough information so that we can influence each other to try new things and just to adopt new ways of life as people, as a society, and see what we can do to render ourselves free and really change this situation that we have today from being controlled to becoming individuals.
You know, Jason, one of the things that I notice, I fly across the country and I look down and I see these little trails of light down below. It's the grid, everybody living within distance of a transformer and a wire. We have a society that's used to getting their water out of a pipe. They're used to getting their electricity out of a socket on the other side of a meter. These technologies, what would they do to that kind of society? Would it change the way that we utilize the earth and our land and our water?
Excellent question, and absolutely. It's not like these new forms of technology would completely wipe out the grid overnight. It's not like thousands of people or millions of people would lose their jobs overnight. These things that we use today would slowly be phased out as we incorporate these new methods into society. So this is very important that we focus on these new methods of energy generation. So
I have to say, your presentation was absolutely outstanding. And with the number of people you have researched, and now with Professor John Searle, do you see a point in the near future in which we can see this propagated earth-wide? And if so, how can we prevent the industries that are currently choking the entire world from fracturing? And we have to be sensitive about that, too. It's a reality.
Absolutely, it's a reality. But we, instead of having to worry about what might happen to the current state or the status quo, we really have to start focusing on the betterment of humanity, what could be, rather than trying to hold on to old ways. What could we be doing now? So, like when Brooks just mentioned, looking down at the grid, all these people want to be off of this type of power, but they don't have the time to look into the things that I fortunately have been able to spend all this time on. So it's a matter of working together as a team and creating synergy. Now, we have all these black projects and these programs today that are working in compartmentalized and individualized projects where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And in order for these things to come out, and we have to utilize these, is to work together as a team. And the only way is to have all the information on the table for people to discern for themselves. And we have levels of skepticism. Well, I'd say denial, because there's a difference between skepticism and denial. People who deny these things might not be aware of the decades of data that would put context to these technologies.
I was going to ask one more question. You know, in Chan-Ju's presentation today, she said that there are 1 billion people on the earth that don't have access to a clean glass of drinking water. I also know from my experience that India, one of the main sources of disease in India, is lack of refrigeration. It isn't as though there isn't a need or a demand for this kind of alternative energy and technology to be released into the market. What's being done today to get that technology into the hands of 1/7 of the world's population?
Well, there is a device called the atmospheric water generator, and it's pretty much like a dehumidifier where it sucks in the water vapor from the atmosphere and condenses it into drinkable water. Now, for countries or for villages that don't have piping, they don't have wells, this is an excellent solution that we could be using today to bring in these major machines that could extract the water from the air. Or a man named Michael Pritchard developed this lifesaver bottle, which you can put muddy, sewage, disgusting pond water in this device, and you just pump this bottle a few times, and it comes out pure and clean on the other side. So in tsunami disasters or in earthquake disasters or in just places where it's desolate, where people don't have access to clean water, these devices can provide that and healthy, clean, sustainable, without impurities and without bacteria, especially in third world countries today, because we today are not focusing on what can be helping others. We're just, especially America, from what I see, is the government and the society today is just trying to make a buck and trying to sustain things for their own development rather than to truly work for the benefit of people. So there are methods to help with water, to improve the quality of our life today. And I would suggest looking into things like the Lifesaver bottle or this atmospheric water generator and these water structurizers that can filter water wherever you are and get these people the resources that they need, the desperate people.
Great. I've got like a two question, basically. One's there's some water out there, Langenberg Research water, that we're all participating in today, and everybody's getting higher and higher off of it. But it's crystallized oxygen suspended in a microhydrant, and he can also use this water to machines right now that generate all the electricity you need, and they can actually make this purified water. You can run sewage water through this system, and it comes out just as a healing water, basically. And then they also have these generator units that provide all the electricity you need in a packet that could be dropped in these places where there are disasters and things of that nature. One of the problems is I worked for several years helping to get this technology out, and the inventors of this technology ended up being threatened. Their labs were blown up. Their families were threatened. And it was to the point where they just said, okay, I'm putting it on the shelf. I'm not going to deal with this anymore. So I'm curious if you've come up with any solutions on how are we going to get protection for these people, and how are we going to be able to bring this technology out and ensure their safety at the same time.
That, I would feel, is by taking their ideas and trying to apply it to your own life. Find out how their machines or how their devices work. Try to build them yourselves, because if they cannot commercialize them, and they cannot sell them to other people, or other people are preventing them from getting to the market, then it's up to us as individuals to try to duplicate them on our own and work as teams together so that we can bring this to fruition in another way without having the legal battles and the legal trouble, because all those legal things happen when people try to commercialize and compete with other forms of oil, with other bottled water companies. There's also a man named Dan Nelson who developed this Wayback water, and it sounds very similar to this micro-clustered water that you were talking about. There's also another man, his name was Dr. Willard, and he developed this catalyst-activated water, which seems to promote rapid growth of plants, heal burns more effectively, and allow for the body to absorb nutrients in a more effective manner. So if we can incorporate these ideas, you don't have to necessarily get the inventor legal help. We can be doing this ourselves, figuring out how they're doing it, and then do it ourselves, because that's the only way that things are going to happen, is if we take it upon ourselves. I'm not sure how we can get by the legal issues, because there's always something that some attorney could come up with to halt production or stop a process. But if you don't care about money, you don't care about commercializing it, and you're just trying to work to the benefit of people, build something, give it to your neighbor, or show him how to do it, show your friends, and really that's the only thing that I can see that we're going to be able to do, is doing it for ourselves on an individual basis and giving it away, or giving the know-how away, rather than patenting an idea or a machine and then keeping that information so that you can keep making money. Be open sourced about it and show people how it works, and so that we can do it ourselves. That's pretty much all there is to it, in my view.
I'm glad that we're speaking of this because we cannot hide the fact that this has happened to many inventors in the past. Short of being subverted or destroyed, we have to go back and think of Nikola Tesla and J.P. Morgan. He was interested in financing, but when he realized that he could not meter the energy, how is something like this in today's world, in the 21st century? Are we going to have to recur to an open source system in which cooperation worldwide knows the secret so that they cannot stop it?
Absolutely, and that is called the Internet. And with the Internet today, we can communicate worldwide with all of our ideas and collaborate on Skype, on YouTube, or on any given forum, and they cannot stop that. If we all do it at the same time and start talking about these things and gathering, there's no way that any government agency can stop this. And no matter how hard they try, it's only when you play by their rules, they will cheat and they will try to bring something down. And that's the main thing. You cannot play by these guys' rules because they keep changing their rules. And it's just seemingly impossible to do anything using the standard methods that we're using today, going by the legal routes, doing all this. It has to be open source, has to be on the internet, and has to be done at the same time in multiple locations where this information is coming from one guy in America, from one guy in Italy, maybe Australia, China, all at the same time. So when multiple ideas are coming out all over the world, more people are likely to see the validity in it. If one guy is making a crazy claim over here, and then 20 years later some other guy is making the claim, it's not going to be as effective. If multiple people at the same time see validity and start to ask their friends, their peers, I wouldn't even say go to your congressman because they don't seem to know or seem to care. So it is up to us to take it upon ourselves and communicate worldwide at the same time. That's pretty much all of us are doing here at this eCity conference. We're just gathering as friends and trying to get this information out and having discussions and bettering ourselves in the process.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show, and keep up the great work. It was an awesome presentation, and he gave us a lot of avenues to look into and different technologies and different inventors and different websites, and hopefully, you know, we can get these technologies out because they really need to get out here in these days to come. So I'm going to bring Renato Lungaro on the show here. He's sitting over in the corner, and I think he's kind of chomping at the bit because he's got some amazing information, and he's a very, very good motivational speaker, you know, really talking about solutions and what's going on. So Renato, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, James, Brooks, and Mel, and everybody else here. I'm really glad to be back again. This is my third visit to the ranch, and I think that everybody comes back because it's a huge portal, and it is a special place that we can gather and share information and become friends and find new friends as well. So I'm glad to be here, and tomorrow I'm going to give my presentation. It's going to be about the cosmic actual age. These changes happened before. Yes, it has happened before. There has been tectonic changes before in history with the rise of new philosophies, religions, ideologies, inventions, change of energy that happened when we change from the Stone Age to Iron Age. So right now we're living is gradually, slowly, you know, the oil age, because we're the last generation to consume oil. Yeah? So we have to find another energy, source of energy. We're the last generation, so in 20 or 30 years, which is nothing in history, we have to find another super oil reservoir, which is not. Even from satellites, you know, research, they have found that they cannot find any more big oil reservoirs. The last one, the latest and the last one, was in Saudi Arabia in 1968. Since then, it's gone. That's why we're trying to drill in the North Pole, in the South Pole, in the all the poles, you know, but we won't find something there because we're trying to find oil everywhere. So even though we're going to try to do the fracking, right, find gas, who knows where else, and then we have earthquakes and we have all this problem with the economy and everything. And what we're going right now is a global spirit, a global awakening, a global political awakening that will be followed by a global spiritual awakening. We need honesty, transparency. We need a change in the superstructure. The superstructure that runs the world is oil, dollar, and the free market. And all these three are in crisis because there is a spiritual fatigue. We are experiencing a spiritual fatigue. We're getting tired of this, the same old story. Then you have the 99% against the 1%. You have the problems in Greece. You have the problem in Spain. You have the problem in this and that. But the place that is the last to wake up, and it's a very dangerous place, is the Middle East. So we have to look about that into the big picture. And the big picture also includes the extraterrestrial presence, because it's a reality merging into ours. They have waited all these centuries. We have evolved. We understand right now that we're not alone. The latest polls are saying that we are getting more aware that we are not alone, that we cannot be the only intelligent species in the universe. So every certain time in history, we have this axial age, AXIAL, coming and changing completely history. So what happened hundreds of years ago is still have an echo during the centuries. This time is going to be costly because we need a new us with the participation of a superior them. So the superior them is a real alien civilization, a sophisticated group of civilization that are looking forward to engage us, to invite us to reap the benefits, the material and spiritual benefits, to be part of the universe. That's why we need another source of energy, like Jason was talking this morning, because we have to go and explore the solar system. Let's say the solar system is our backyard. So instead of finding gold, iron, and oil, whatever, we're going to find another planet. So we're going to stop polluting the planet Earth, because that's why we need to go outer space. But with it, for that, the first thing that we need, with or without extraterrestrials, is a shift of consciousness. And that is also a cultural rescue that you were talking, Shenzha, this afternoon. And I was amazed by your talking, Shenzha, because, I mean, you have, as I told you minutes ago, you have such a powerful, you know, aura, you know, such a yin and yang that I had to wear sunglasses to see you, you know, you glow, you know. I mean, it's amazing. And what, you know, we have to learn here is that, yes, this ancient knowledge is available to everybody. If in India, China, the old empires, they have, you know, 4,000, 5,000 years old, we have to rescue them right now. And with the use of technologies, with the use of the virtual information that we're globalized right now, nothing can stop that. The information, you know, is going faster and faster in real time. That really shapes the collective consciousness of humanity. So what happened in the 60s with the, you know, Cultural Revolution is happening right now. It's happening faster and furious. And that is one of the things we have to realize, because these kind of movements are the ones who overthrow governments. And this is something that the myopic leaders that we are having right now, it is a phenomenon. All these politicians are in a process of polarization. You know, the rights, the leftists, the centrists, and who knows what else, but everything is coming into a turning point.
You know, Renato, I was going to ask a question. We see the G8, the G20, this group and that group meeting together, and this think tank and that poll. Nobody knows what to do, it seems. They've got all these smart people trying to analyze the whole world, the Bilderbergs pushing their money around and trying to manipulate this, and they're at a loss. I think maybe humanity is starting to awaken, maybe in a pocket here and a pocket there, and they're losing control of it. So how do you see this revolution occurring? How do you see consciousness taking the human race to the next level? And maybe one more question on top of that is, had there been ever other civilizations on this planet that maybe didn't make it?
You always put in trouble all these speakers, broke. I mean, I need a beer here. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I think that we're experiencing a turning point in history. Some people call it the end of history. Other people call it clash of civilizations. Other people think it's a crisis in society. So from a sociological, anthropological perspective, we are experiencing that the major institutions that, you know, help us in society is not giving us answers. Even religious institutions like the Vatican involved in this ongoing moral problems, even financial problems, unbelievable. And this is the part that we have to understand and to educate ourselves and educate the people. And this is a long-term agenda. I don't think it's going to be a cosmic abracadabra on the 23rd of December of this year, and everything is going to be a magical ascension, you know? Sometimes I wonder all these spiritual messages, all these beautiful ascending whatever ideas or spirits that tell us, you know, everything's going to be fantastic, we're going to be in the fourth dimension. Well, it could be. We'll see what happened on the 23rd of December, you know? I'll be back, and I invite you a cup of coffee all of that, you all together, and to see what's going on. And also, I think that in ancient times, there has been civilization that didn't make it. They were here. They left the footprints and they left these remains as a testimony that we are not perfect, that we have to come together somehow, some way, because it's only one biosphere, only one human race, one planet. If the biosphere start to collapse because there's too much radiation or pollution, all the systems within systems that include us, the intelligent human beings, are going to suffer and pay the bill. Therefore, we need to get into real action. And it's not only a theory. Practice and experience counts.
Yeah, great. You know, and a lot of the research I was doing, I'm curious how this relates. I know you've been doing a lot of research in South America and Latin American countries. The scientists in Russia talk about us moving into this highly energized place in space right now, where the leading edge of our heliosphere is just lighting up beyond anything, 1,000 times brighter. All the planets are lighting up. All the planets are going through global warming. So it's more of a cosmic event that's unfolding. And I know Susan, I think Joy Renison, yeah. She came out with some wonderful information that's verifying all this, that we're getting bombarded with up to 500 hits of pulses from cosmic, you know, forces and cosmic rays and gamma rays, and all these things are coming in where we used to be hit with maybe 50 in the past. It's gone up to 500, and we're moving into this alignment with galactic plane. I believe the Earth is in it already, and the Sun and the Earth will be in it December 21st, you know, which coincides with the calendar. So I'm just curious, what, as far as your research, have you come up with as far as this major alignment with galactic plane coming up and how it ties into maybe the Mayan calendar and some of the ancient cultures and their beliefs?
Another tricky question. But anyway, what I think, and doing my research, is the elite knows about this. When I talk about the elite, there is a political or financial elite that they can buy, purchase, or hijack this information. And there is a very interesting report of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. I think it's in 2003. They released this information about geomagnetic storms activity and the stock market. And they have found out that the more there's a powerful geomagnetic storms, people start to sell like crazy their bonds, the stock market and everything. There is an upheaval in the stock market. So these former tycoons like the Rockefellers and others knew about that. They gathered this information for Nobel Prize winners because they found a pattern and cycles in history when you had to buy crops, when you had to buy gold, when you had to buy silver. That's what they retained the power. If we add that cosmic event that is happening from December, according to the Mayan calendar and according to other sources, according to scientific information, what it seems to me, because I don't have the final word, that there is a very interesting phenomenon that's going to happen. I think it's going to be like a global awakening that we're going to see and we're going to experience like a mirror effect of our consciousness. I found out that through the Garabandal predictions, the bridging of Garabandal, that phenomenon happened in 1961, because in 1961 many things happened. Powerful geomagnetic storm, the first known abduction of a biracial couple, Barack Obama was born in 1961, the rise of the civil rights movements with Martin Luther King, and also this four children, 11-year-old children in Garabandal, Spain, received information saying that there will be a warning, a call from God, from the Catholic perspective. Okay? We have to use the cultural perspective as a filter to understand as a Catholic message. The extraterrestrials, in my opinion, use this institution, the oldest institution, to spread the message as a tool of information. So it's up to us to decode it or not. Taking all this religious belief, and you get the information. What Conchita Gonzalez, who's the one who received the first virgin apparition and the messages, telepathical messages, because they enter into ecstasies and all these experiences, spiritual experiences, according to her and the other three children that also witnessed the same thing in a collective experience, very interesting, they were saying that it will happen worldwide. Even if you are in a plane, it will be like a clash, like a thunder without sound, but it will be light, and people will experience what they have done and not done to change their life. If you're talking from 1961 in a little village in Garabandal with only 300 inhabitants, 11-year-old girl receiving that information, you have to pay attention for that. So I think that from the center of the galaxy, some sort of unknown energy is going to bring like a lighthouse, a beam of light in perhaps combination with a powerful geomagnetic storm that can affect our brain activity, and we're going to have a flashback. We're going to see our lives, a review of our life, and to feel we're going to be our own judge and understand what's going to happen with our own mirror of our life, because we deserve that much-needed shift of consciousness. What is the judge exactly that sent us all this opportunity, this cosmic opportunity, to one time event in the human history to see and reveal ourselves, our great spheres, great achievement, our gifts, and also what we can do and we did not do to change things in our lives. So I think that I'm going for that. I think that could happen. And I hope it could happen because we need that experience, global experience, to in order to wake up and to have this opportunity from the universe, you know, that I think it was already registered before the Big Bang.
Yeah, it definitely seems the information we were getting was very similar. They were telling us like the whole Earth was going to go through a near-death experience and have their own light review, and which is going to be really interesting in the future. And we don't know exactly how that's going to happen, but galactic plane does seem to be the trigger for that event.
And I hear, Renato, that DNA operates like miniature laser beams. And if our sun is reacting, now maybe there's even a cosmic event or a cosmic energy. Maybe that's the reason or the await for the awakening. But another question, we have to be a satellite or an astronaut to look down towards planet Earth to realize that there are no borders when you look at the planet from the outside. I don't want to use the term New World Order, but you call it New World Vision. What is it going to take for an extraterrestrial civilization to come here and realize that we are united and not divided as we are today?
I think because of the information I received through a group of friends in 1979 and then in 1990 related to these future events, that's part of the information we received that, and 60% of the predictions already happened. And they mentioned that the first 10 years of the new millennium are going to be very important for the future of humanity. And we're already beyond the 10 years of the new millennium, you know. But prophecies and predictions are not written in stone, because the more aware we become, we can change and shift the future events. And at the same time, I think that if we develop a new world vision, and we are in that process, we can beat that idea that has been hijacked by many conspiracy theorists, with all my respect, that the Great Seal of the United States, that the Novus Ordo Seclorum and all this symbolism, a high, deep meaning of a higher spiritual level of information that was incepted in the beginning of this country, because there is no other country like the United States in the world. You know, the rise of China is spectacular, but they are not democratic. And these main values are going to be not only Americans, a global common values. And everybody deserves that. Who doesn't not deserve to have a free speech, liberty, and all these benefits that humankind deserve? So therefore, you have a group of people that think it's going to be a new world order. So this is our project on Earth. This is who we are. What's that end? After 13 billions after the Big Bang, we're going to be just a new world order ruled by a group of mad scientists and elite that's going to enslave us. I'd rather die, you know, instead of living that way. We need a new world vision. And a new world vision will take sacrifice, will take time, will take, you know, and global effort, because we cannot change alone anymore. We need of each other. And that's where we're going from an ethnocentric worldview into an ecoplanetary worldview. We're not going, in my opinion, humble opinion, into a cosmic consciousness. That's too far. Maybe in the future. But we need to protect the environment first, because we depend on the environment. From an ecoplanetary perspective, we can think after that on a cosmic consciousness. From that perspective is the perspective of the extraterrestrials. They do have cosmic consciousness. They're able to come to the Earth and able to go beyond the speed of light because they have a tremendous technology that is under control of their own mind and spirit. And that is the big difference that we have. And I think the new world vision is brewing under the social fabric of societies around the world. And we have to expect more social changes, social shocks, in order to have a new structure that is more compassionate, more loving, and also care for nature. If we don't take care of the house, then we're going to pay the bill. And what is the mission of the intelligent creature? I think the mission of the intelligent creature is to preserve life. And that is our biggest responsibility now.
Great. That was awesome. Definitely. It seems to me any wise king would be taking care of his kingdom, but we don't seem to have very many wise kings on the planet right now. And I always think about their program, you know, the New World Order boys. They have these big underground facilities, and they're all going to run under when changes start. And I think it's hilarious because when you have a bunch of tyrannical control freaks all together in a little hole, you know, what's going to happen when the energy comes in and pushes all that to the surface? You know, all those angers and frustrations and wounds and traumas that they haven't dealt with, you know, they're going to be all down there together, you know. And I don't think I want to be in one of those underground facilities when the energy comes in, because from what I've heard is that this energy that's coming in is going to affect everything. I mean, you can't hide from it. It's the whole Earth. Every atom on the planet is going to be experiencing this energy. And so there's, you know, we have that old saying, you know, wherever you go, there you are. And you can't run from your karma, you know, because it's can't hide from it. You got to clean it up and forgive yourself and forgive others and live a life of service is the only way to get out of this box that we put ourselves in. But
don't you think that they should go ahead and get in their shelters now and let us take it from here?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think they should go under their shelters now, and we should get out some nice welding welding units and weld them shut and then turn the hose on. No, but okay, that was not really spiritual, but you know, after watching what's been happening to humanity and the Earth over many lifetimes on this planet, you know, my deep love for humanity and the Earth, I get a little tired of watching what tyranny is doing to this planet, this beautiful planet. But I think their days are numbered, and just the frequencies coming in are going to take care of that. So any last words, Renato, before we sign off?
Well, I really appreciate the invitation again. I'm glad to be we all here, and looking forward to share tomorrow about, you know, my research. And I just want to let you all, the listeners, that I just published a book. It's The ET Presence, Role of the USA and New World Visions, when I got in-depth information about this and other issues. So I'm really excited, and thank you, James, and you and all your team to have done all this work through all these years.
So how do people get a hold of that book so they can read your latest work?
They can go to Balboa Press. They type my name, Renato Longaro, or ET Presence, Role of the USA New World Visions, Amazon.com, and Barnes & Noble. And they also have the electronic version. which is more cheaper and downloadable in any computer. So that is a result of more than a couple of years of research. So hopefully it will help to create a new vision, not only for the United States, but for the rest of the world. That is the idea. Thank you.
Thank you for your work, and there's no excuse to remain ignorant. You know, it's very cheap if you want to go online and get it and get the download. But anyway, let's bring John Kelly on. We've got John sitting here patiently, and we want to get John out in the field because John is our awesome cameraman that seems to catch all these phenomenal UFOs and paranormal activity and landings, and I can go on and on with here at the ranch. He's been here. How long have you been with us, sir?
Oh, since the late 90s, I guess, so at least a dozen years or more.
Yeah, so anyway, but he's been kind of one of our main cameramen out in the field and filming the mass sightings and the interactions between the groups, and it's just been amazing. So any further ado, I want to bring John on the show. Welcome to the show.
Hi, James, Brooks, Mel. Great to be with everybody, and it's great to be back at the ranch. I can't tell you the high energy I feel every time I come here, and it's so heartwarming to see everybody, the familiar faces, great personalities who come together for such a good cause. And, you know, I believe so much in this group because year after year, all those intention experiments, always the consequences seem to include visitors, you know, that everybody saw. We taped them together. You know, we were there together, and we had collective contact together. And I think we created something very powerful at these events here at the ranch. And, you know, my hat's off to James and everybody who makes this happen every year. I'm having a great time being back together with you.
You know, and again, I can't, even on the air here, I want to express, you know, my heartfelt thanks to all the staff here and the everybody that helps put this on. I mean, we've all been on overload putting this together, and everybody just stepped in and you know, took it on, and it's been quite a challenge, but we're still here. And actually, I would love everybody to send some nice prayers for us on Tuesday at 1 o'clock, because we are going to the White Salmon Courthouse to make sure that eSETI continues to operate. So that's going to be quite an interesting experiment there. So we'd love for all the listeners to put their intention in on just seeing this completely dismissed. You know, we're having some flack, you know, it's just part of the process. You know, whenever you're, you know, the old saying, pioneers take the most arrows, or when you're over the target, you're getting flack. And this is the flack that we're dealing with. And there are certain groups that would like to shut down eSETI, but they are so living in the dark ages, I'm sure they're not going to be successful. But, you know, hopefully we can, you know, keep the doors open here, and I'm sure we will, and continue to have these amazing contacts and continue to have John here filming these contacts as well. It's just been amazing, the dedication and the footage that he's gotten here at eSETI, which I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about.
Well, James, you know, it wouldn't be possible to tape all of these unidentified flying objects if they weren't constantly flying over this location and through the field and appearing in the forest in so many different ways, reinforcing so many of the stories I had heard you and your witnesses talk about over the years, the footage that I had seen from this location that was so convincing and compelling. And to become a witness myself, part of the group that has this shared experience, has been amazing. You know, when we compare the testimony of the people who came before us about the characteristics of the lights and the Yakima area lights, and now what the cameras show, it's remarkable, the color changing behaviors, the interactivity, the close encounters of the fifth kind, all of these phenomena, singular going to multiple. So many of the interesting captures and the low altitude captures, like that fantastic object you taped coming down off of Mount Adams over the Field of Dreams. You and witnesses were there. You had the night vision rolling. That's one of the most sensational and baffling pieces of footage in terms of how anyone could mistake that for any known or conventional object or entity. This is real wilderness experience. So I have to say, there's been so many opportunities to learn about skills in recording, and so, you know, the kind of hookup that a person has to make, kind of connection with the subject a person has to make to be a participant in the production of the photography. There's all these different dimensions that the different photographers I talk about: the psychic dimensions, the inner dimensions, the dream world, the out-of-body travel, and this connection with their relationship with what they're reporting as ETs and what they're making videos of. So that there's a dimension that almost seems as if they're seeing through our eyes, framing the shots through our viewfinders, and that's why the shots line up so well, because some of these are just impossible shots otherwise, you know?
Have you noticed, I'm sure you've noticed it, but if you are attuned and if you've done your practice or your spiritual practice, whatever it is, meditation or yoga or things like that, and you've learned to quiet the mind, have you noticed that just because of that, there's like this intuitive awareness or this knowingness that you're automatically just looking at them or you feel the presence and your camera just seems to be in the right place at the right time?
Well, I think that intuition is part of the whole thing. I guess, you know, having been in the field for a little while and produced my own events and with other photographers, been along with them on ventures where events happened, this inner dimension is the most significant part. And I think that the contacts lead us to draw conclusions about that, that they provide indicators through the contact incidents about looking within. I have an interesting story to share about a recent field trip I took to the interior of British Columbia, where I visited a location which I called the UFO Canyon. And there's been a lot of sightings and really interesting phenomena in that location. So earlier in the spring, I was able to make a road trip up and spend a few nights taping. And we had night after night of very high quality imaging and CE5 type incidents, all this kind of classical footage that answered a lot of questions that I'd been asking over the years about what were we seeing, you know, what was the low lux camera seeing but that we couldn't quite see, and now we're seeing it in the night vision. We're going, wow, they were communicating with us a couple of years ago, and now we're locking in on, you know, what's really going on. Where it took us time to, you know, to mature to it. So these locations where I've been able to go again, that I had that fantastic series of nights, and then I made one more unexpected trip to the location for an overnight, and that we were under cloud cover, wasn't a lot of good taping opportunities. What happened? I had a really intense dream experience, a vision at 6 in the morning, where there was like the roof of the structure that I was sleeping in had disappeared, and all that was happening was this large metallic disc was spinning as it was flying over, right over the side of the canyon, over the property, and I was having a direct line of sight with it. And I was like, I was looking at the edge of it, and I was going, you know, is this like luminous material, or is it something solid? And I could see the rotation. It was like a grain, you know, unlike like a light body. So it was really interesting to me. And the other pervasive sense about that was traveling towards the setting sun, but the pervasive sense was that there was some kind of consciousness that was making this state possible where I could be in the presence of some sort of ominously, bigger entity, and share that space with them in that time and be awake or aware of that. You know, that was, in other words, that was the sighting for that trip. It happened on the inside. So the inner dimensions of contact, I think this is a very important area, and I think it's a developing trend that there'll be more disclosure about people talking about UFO encounters in their dreams, sightings, experiences that are psychic. The people will become more accustomed, that will become more normalized. The people will talk about UFOs in that sense.
So you'd be saying kind of the out-of-body contact or interdimensional contact, where we are multidimensional beings and we expand into that higher awareness of these other bodies within bodies all the way back to the source, and then we start hooking up with beings with light bodies and light ships and energy bodies and energy ships and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that we're going to be growing into a perception of a shared, like, multidimensional universe that will become normalized for us in our society culturally. There'll be room for it outside of Disney's Seven Dwarfs.
I was going to ask a question, John. You know, one of the things that we find in regular society out there where they say, you don't really believe in UFOs, do you? And I always answer that question, well, you don't really believe we're alone in the universe, do you? Well, we've seen photographs from here and from time to time. We see YouTubes, but they're poorly produced. They're not really prepared. Their cameras are out of focus. They're jostled all around. I really have great respect for you that you go in the field with the right equipment, with the right skill set, and you're capturing things that really are phenomenal. How do people respond when they see the great footage that you take in the field, not only in the daytime, but also in nighttime with night vision? How do they respond? I mean, this blows the Science Channel away. It blows History Channel away. What do they do when they see your footage?
Well, I have third-hand testimony about people going through jaw-dropping responses to some of the imaging. You know, it provokes. You know, we're awakening an archetype in consciousness. These are like sort of epic experiences that we're exploring, and so they have all this overture in collective consciousness. And that's how I interpret it. I guess I have a literary sense of that guides me in terms of looking for the symbolism or identifying the symbolic nature of the contacts. As I said before, I believe that the external, the empirical contact that can be measured with instruments is a reflection of powerful connections happening within us. And some of it is just symbolic. And like, you know, when people go back to what this is well-trodden ground, but ancient cultures and their symbols with winged discs and so on, you know, perpetuating a related archetype. The flying disc, right, is an ancient symbol. So we're encountering that at the same time. Many of the mythical stories in our literary traditions, like the Bible, as in people with encountered with disc objects, and there's visual parallels in the footage with that literary type of interpretation of wheels within wheels, as we see the halos around those luminous objects, which are spectacular and recorded more than once here. Brooks, you know, you and I visited the ranch once, and boy, did I mess up some of the connections at the airport. So we were all running late, and just as we got out of the car together, we had a huge flyover. I had screwed up all my camera equipment, so I wasn't prepared. But we all saw this big dude flying over, and he was creating sun dogs in the atmosphere around it. Now, I guess I have a question for you, because I haven't really had a chance to visit this question. But do you remember that event, and what was your interpretation of what that luminous halo meant?
Well, I got to be honest with you. When I first came up here to the ranch, I had never seen a UFO before. I always wanted to. I mean, I would sometimes go out to the desert and look for days. I'd never see anything. First time I come up here, we go to a film production on Friday night or whatever. Saw the film, came out. It was after dark. I walked out and said, somebody said, "Hey, look at that." And I looked up and here's the ship flying overhead. And then it did what you all call here powered up. It got really bright. I mean, so bright that I could see the light on the ground. Well, I peed my pants. Not really. But I had a fear come up inside of me, like, whoa, that thing's coming right down on top of us. And then it stopped and went back up and changed direction, went another way. I was no longer a believer, John. I was a knower at that point. So when we stepped out of the vehicle that day, and it, you know, we're all in duffel bags and suitcases, we've been flying for half the day, we're not prepared to see it, and then it flies over. You go, wow, I really wish I was ready to photograph that, because the image is in my mind, but it's so affected me. You know, there's not, I don't want to call it an emotional connection. It's almost telepathic in the way that it influences you. It really changes your life. But every time I've come up here for, 6 years now, I have seen craft. I have felt that same feeling. What I want to know from you, I'm going to turn the question back on you, because you're the documentarian. You know, we're amateurs at this. We don't know how to keep the orb in focus. I don't know how to keep it in the middle of the lens. You're the documentarian. You're the one out there vigilant in the weeds, you know, waiting for that opportunity. You know, I'm fascinated by History Channel, where they have a guy who goes out for 2 years looking for a snow leopard to chase down a rabbit, and you know, he films it in slow motion, and then he puts it on the TV, and he makes a lot of money. Yeah, you're that guy looking for that one craft that makes that one turn where we get that one angle that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt we're being visited. What's going on in your mind when you're out there doing that?
I think all of the incidents are exciting, and they're all novel in a lot of different ways. So there's constant novelty and new phenomena, and this is how we're differentiating what we're observing. We're setting a baseline, looking at the behaviors of the objects, and it's kind of simple because some of it simply involves, you know, light on, light off, you know, binary. It's pretty simple, but we can draw conclusions based on simple evidence like that. But I do think, you know, it's a very high adrenaline. You know, it's like an export. There's some element of risk. You know, UFO world is fraught with dangers. You know, at every turn, But it's high adventure at the same time, and it is in a high frontier in the sense that we're breaking ground in a way that's not injuring the environment or anybody. We're making discoveries, and we're on the front edge of expanding knowledge. So that's a very exciting place to be. It's very invigorating. It's physically challenging to keep, you know, late hours or lug equipment, but there's a lot of reward in it. And you think about gentlemen go out hunting in the wilderness. Well, we're just taking different kinds of instruments into the same kind of climate and experiencing that, you know, the benefits of being out there as well. No.
And I'm always so privileged to have John Kelly close to me because I saw my first UFO here 2 years ago, and he was the one who documented it. Surprise, surprise. But, John, with the advent of the Internet, as you know, the capability of people being able to replicate anything these days, you, on the other hand, in my mind, I think you were the debunker buster because you have the equipment, you have infrared, and you have multiple cameras running at the same time. And last year, you and I did a video to show the people that it's not that expensive, and we could actually replicate this around the world. How do you see the world of the people, the amateurs out there, being able to document what you document and to spread this in a way that it cannot be debunked?
Well, I think that as long as we're in the present kind of political climate that's permissive of the intense surveillance or budgets for military personnel on home territory, monitoring places like the internet, the cyber warrior kind of institutions that are being created, I think that there will be an uphill struggle in the, you know, the information battleground, so to speak, the war of ideas, which is what is essentially what the intellectual culture has become. And the good ideas, if people have the courage to shoulder them, they will make progress. It's fear of, you know, fear of attempting something that holds most people back. Most good ideas will never reach fruition because people feel inhibited about bringing them into the world. So, you know, I think I've targeted some good lines of research, but I've faced different challenges along the way. I'm still here is testimony that, you know, someone like myself can do this kind of produce this kind of evidence and still participate year after year. And that there are avenues available for people who, you know, exercise due caution, particularly in these kinds of areas of research, you know, where there's challenges to existing systems. It's the effect on, you know, initially it's the psychological effect on the researchers themselves by studying that's this particular subject. There's an influence from that subject when our minds concentrate on a higher intelligence. There's a possibility that our consciousness will start to conform to that wavelength. So that we're growing, we feel that we're growing in terms of consciousness, and we're growing in terms of skills. The taping itself is neurologically challenging because most people get a lot of jitters. James has a lot of stories about pro camera operators not able to function in the close-up presence of UFOs. So there's neurological challenges to stabilize the shots and to develop techniques for shooting that minimize error, that, you know, you can anticipate the kind of problems that will come up. The right kind of equipment. We see that different kinds of high-quality electronic goods continue to become available in the consumer market. They're targeting prices below $1,000 for components that can, in different conditions, can outperform more expensive equipment. So it's more it's a time of initiative. Those who want to pursue this kind of adventure are probably more empowered than people have been in the past. At the same time, what the outcome will be of I like to think we have to think about living in a post-disclosure society, you know, that we have to begin living as if this is the case already and begin to think about how do we live and work and succeed in this post-disclosure environment. That has to be the mindset. We want to bring that. Our energies are best applied, you know, promoting something positive like that.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We have Dion Jha over here sitting patiently and waiting through all this. She's taking a little break because she just gave a wonderful talk here about Tiangong and about her practices and her celestial connections, and I can go on and on. She had the whole group mesmerized, and at the end, the energies that came into the room were so phenomenal that, I felt like I was looking at a slideshow or something in my third eye, and energies are going all through my body and everything else. It was quite amazing, but We want to bring her on the show and bring her wonderful energy over the airwaves and let you all get to know her and experience her energy. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Brooks. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, everyone in the conference hall. It's an honor and pleasure to have been here. It's one of the most special experiences I have ever had. Our host, James, and all your wonderful staff, just phenomenal. I am often moved to tears for how loving and how accommodating you all are. All the attendees are very special. Every little conversation I had with them was just so profound, so meaningful. It really gave us a hope about our future in spite of all this anticipation of what might happen on December 21st. I really believe it's a great opportunity in light of the crisis. For a lot of us to be awakened and to elevate to a higher level. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate and love all of the people here. And I feel this close and deep connection with the people here at a soul level. It's truly like a family. A lot of brothers and sisters reunited. Just very, very beautiful experience. Thank you.
One of the questions I have, you know, I look at the world through the eyes of a scientist, but I sometimes make spiritual observations. And sometimes people ask me, what do I do to get prepared? How do I get ready for these changing times that are going to accelerate and maybe take us to places we've never been before? And I find myself ill-prepared to answer that question. But you are imminently prepared to answer that question. How do you prepare the individual soul with energy to be able to adapt to a rapidly changing society?
Thank you, Brooks. Well, you know, in my regular job as a CPA and a certified financial planner, I'm a very practical person. I was raised with Confucius' value to love and respect all life, but my mom and dad always told me not to be superstitious. So when spirituality comes to me, I have to be able to prove it in a way before I take any action or before I even share with anyone. And also I believe in being responsible in what you say, what you share, and being credible. I always had this desire to serve in charities, in nonprofit organizations, but I thought I would just do as much as I can. I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a very busy professional, and I thought I would devote myself entirely to charity work and nonprofit work after I retire. And now, with what's going on here, I decided I probably could not afford to wait until I retire. I've put a long way before I retire at a legal retirement age, but I would highly encourage people who are concerned about the quality of their soul, the future of their soul, to put down what's not so important. Of course, we have to live, we have to survive, we have to provide for our family, but just enough to get by for now so we can devote ourselves to spirituality, to public service, to purify our soul, cleanse our soul, and nourish our soul. In serving and helping others, your soul gets bigger and purer. And that's, to me, the only way to go at this critical time. And I really see there will be casualty in the upcoming disasters for souls who refuse to awaken. And this is not fear, talk, or threat. It's just going to happen. I don't know how Mother Earth is going to dispose them and where they are going. But this is a great opportunity to focus, to reprioritize. Stop you know, putting all our efforts into money-making businesses and put more and more efforts into serving others, healing your souls and healing others at the same time. And we have so many modalities. It's not like we don't know what to do, how to do it. It's out there. At Tiangong, I do this as a pure volunteer. I don't want a penny from it. We only charge enough tuition to cover operating expenses. We intentionally make it so affordable, so people from with minimum means can afford our classes. And we are posting information, energy healing transmissions on the internet, via YouTube, Vimeo, our own Tiangong website, so more people will receive it and receive healing. Thank you.
I know the practices that you do, the Tiangong, it's a little different than Qigong, although they all fit into a very similar category. Like they say, yoga is all-encompassing, so everything fits within it. But the difference between your practice, I'd love for you to explain a little bit. It's more of a celestial or more of a, hooking into the higher dimensional beings and bringing that into the our physical awareness and our bodies for healing and things of that nature. So if you could talk a little bit about that, just let people know a little bit more about Tiangong and what it's about.
Thank you, James. Actually, Tiangong is one of Qigong schools. So there are 3,000 Qigong schools in China, as I mentioned before, and Tiangong happens to be a very comprehensive system of healing body, mind, and soul. When I was very little, my mom was dying of uterine cancer as a result of a minor surgery that went terribly wrong. At any moment, I was ready to lose my mom. And all the physicians, top-notch physicians, told my mom and the whole family just to be prepared. There's nothing we can do. She was bleeding to death until this wonderful Qigong master came to town. Within a very short time, she turned around. I remember as a little girl, I didn't understand, comprehend the concept of cancer or death. I remember she was so thin and pale and so weak. And all of a sudden she was vibrant, beautiful, and strong again. It was a miracle to me. So I consider myself very fortunate to have this life experience and near-death experience with my mom. So I really, really appreciate what Qigong does to people's health. Growing up, I pursue different masters, different teachers, whenever there's one coming to town, learning from different schools. I'm grateful to all of the teachers. For all the past teachers I had, they were all limited to physical. So it's primarily moving your body to allow the qi to clear the blockages. Tiangong is very unique. Tian means celestial. So you can interpret Tiangong as celestial qigong. All the practices, we have A, B, C level. A is physical. B is working on the soul. It's primarily meditative. And C is working on Tuo Tai Huan Gu, which is for Chinese words, meaning replacing your entire energy body and removing your negative karma from your soul. So it's a working on both body and the soul at a very high level. In ancient China, some people spend their entire lifetime in the mountains. They relinquish all their family wealth, all their family relationships to pursue this so they can achieve this alchemy. So this is the highest level, and all the practices are received through energy healing transmission, through divine communication. None of them were from human mind. It's not like the master is sitting in the room making up body movements. according to how he understands the body works. So that's the most unique part. And the core value is love and respect of all human life, all animals and plants. It's not human-centered. You know, we believe a lot of the problems we have on this planet is because we are so human-centered. Our decisions are made based on what we need, what's convenient for us. Just because the animals' language cannot be understood, the trees cannot talk to a level we can understand, doesn't mean they don't count. And we need to have this beautifully imbalanced system to survive and thrive so we can sustain ourselves longer.
And lately I've been speaking with natives around the world, and we keep hearing of going back to the old ways. Now, you're a certified public accountant and a financial consultant. How do you reconcile living in two paradigms? The paradigm of what we do, just like me, small business owner and so on, but also we discuss all these topics. In your case, Tiangong, how do you reconcile being in both paradigms?
Interesting question, Mel. You know, when I first decided to take this title as a master, I had no idea what I might expect it to do. What does it mean? Do I have all these abilities? It was very intimidating to me. I never thought about, never imagined or dreamt of being a master, a Qigong master. But Grandmaster Le Tian received messages repeatedly that you are the one. And I said, no, please listen again. You are probably mistaken. And he said, you have a very good third eye. You have very good, divine communicate. You ask yourself. And sure, I cannot lie in front of the divine. The messages was very clear. At first, I was actually worried that my clients, you know, people who trust me for their money would think I'm unconventional or a little out there, lose my credibility. And I decided to put a clear boundary. So with my financial clients who come here for financial consulting, I did not mention what I did as a volunteer. With my students at Tiangong, when they knew what I do during the day, which is becoming shorter and shorter, when they ask me for advice, I try not to allow that crossing of the two fields, because I want to serve with a pure heart, pure intent. I don't want anything that can change the pure energy at Tiangong. But gradually, I see a lot of people who are very successful in their professions, such as doctors, lawyers, business owners. They started to complain how unhappy they are, how sick they are physically and emotionally, and that they were hopeless. You know, I'm somebody who can't stand seeing another human being suffer or another life suffer. I asked the Universal Grandmasters, should I share? I feel guilty for not sharing. I know the solution. So eventually I crossed that line. I said, if you truly want some healing, you're welcome to check out this organization where I teach and share, and just to see if it helps you. A lot of doctors who are open-minded come to the classes, and they are incredible, which gave me hope and faith about our future again, to see these people who used to be in a position of just prescribing drugs and pushing them to the surgery and didn't show much care. And their old complaint to me was, I'm not paid enough, I'm tired, I work long hours. Now their main complaint is really about not satisfied because their patients are dying in spite of paying a lot of money. I was really happy that way. So right now, it's a natural way. And my clients happy. I'm luckily, they don't feel, I'm not going to trust you with my money anymore. They actually trust me more and more. People are saying, finally we have somebody who is spiritual
you know, that I can trust. And also with intelligence, with knowledge in finances, I trust you even more. So that's good.
So it's wonderful to have somebody with a high level of integrity and spirituality to take care of your business affairs. It's too bad we can't take this same formula and apply it to our own system here, our own political system, because I don't trust any of those guys in my life. You know, and rightfully so. But, boy, we can go so far. There's... you know, I don't want to tax you again. I know when you did that beautiful song and the invocation to bring in the healing energies, that was just amazing. I don't know if you have it in you to do a short version or whatever you feel appropriate. We have, 15 minutes left or so on the show?
Yes.
And, you know, whatever you feel like. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know a lot of the listeners would just love to hear one of your beautiful invocations to bring in that higher energy. And I want to tell people, too, is that find yourself a nice, comfortable space to be in when this happens and open your hearts and minds, and you'll be surprised at what comes through and what comes across the air.
So given that we are in the middle of summer season, I'd like to share and invoke the heart healing transmission. Would that be all right? Okay. So Monday I'll be teaching a workshop at ISETI at 4 o'clock for 3 hours on heart healing. So this is a mini version of that. And also I would like to share that message I received last Tuesday in meditation, which was entitled Heart. I'm going back in time and space to Tuesday in my living room while I was meditating and clearing the energy field here. Oh, by the way, the energy field here is one of the most beautiful, brightest I have ever experienced. Thank you for your work here, and thank you for all the divine beings here. So I hope I remember that poem correctly. So at 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. last Tuesday, June the 26th, in meditation, all of a sudden this poem came to me, which is unusual because I'm not a poet. At first I thought, is that a peace prayer of St. Francis? Because the sentence structure is very similar. But I listen and look clearly. I say look because there was a selector string written right in front of me, a very quick download. So this is the content. The title is Heart, with a big red heart right in the middle of the air. Om Divine Mother, make me an instrument of your great love. Where there's a cold heart, let me warm it. Where there's a hardened heart, let me soften it. Where there's a weakened heart, let me strengthen it. Where there's a hungry heart, let me nourish it. Where there's a broken heart, let me heal it. Where there's a lonely heart, let me love it. For I am love, and I love every heart. Thank you, Divine Mother, for infusing me with infinite amount of great love to warm, soften, strengthen, nourish, heal, and love every heart. When every heart is filled with great love, this planet will become heaven on earth, where all lives live together happily in peace and harmony. This is just not a message just for me. It is for all of us, because we all have love in our heart. And I really believe the combination of love and wisdom will resolve all the problems on this planet.
So now relax in your chair with your eyes gently closed. Moisten your lips with the tip of your tongue. Smile. According to traditional Chinese medicine, summertime is the best season for heart healing. It is also the most vulnerable time for our hearts, as more people die of a heart attack in the summertime than in any other seasons. Let's take the opportunity to nourish, strengthen, and heal our hearts. Now, put your hands together in front of you, palms touching each other in a universal prayer position. With our hearts filled with humility, sincerity, gratitude, reverence, and a lot of love, we invoke Holy Mother Mary, Guanyin Bodhisattva, Buddha, and Jesus by making one bow. Bow, rise. According to the Chinese five element medical practice, the energy waves of our heart are closely associated with the energy waves of planet Mars. Let's connect with the deities, the universal grandmasters on planet Mars. The very bright and brilliant red color from planet Mars is coming to all of us. The red lights are shining upon us, coming down from acupuncture points on the top of our head, directly into our hearts, illuminating our entire body, flushing out toxins, stress, worries, and all the negative emotions, nourishing us with positive energy and great love. Now I'm going to sing a select song to facilitate and enhance the energy healing transmission. If you see the select beings in our space, feel free to acknowledge them and send your love and gratitude to them. Mm-hmm.
The soles of your feet, which will help you come back to this time and space. Again, put your palms together in a universal prayer position. We humbly ask the universal grandmasters to help us send the yin garbage, which is the negative qi, negative information released from this practice to the universe for recycling and proper management. At the same time, replenish our space, body, mind, and heart with positive information, positive energy, light of great love, righteous chi of great discernment, and integrity. We send our deep love and gratitude to the universe, all the universal grandmasters, high wisdom beings, Mother Earth, all of humanity, animals, plants, and all beings. And to our own heart. Now put your palms on your lower dantian. For women, right hand at the bottom, men, left hand at the bottom. Rub your lower dantian 9 times each direction. Now rub your palms until they are warm. We'll do a dry wash our faces. From the side of your faces, up, then cross your forehead, down in the middle, then repeat the same 18 times. Thank you, everyone, for being with us.
Thank you so much. What an incredible energy transmission that was. It looks like we're coming up the end of the hour, so we're going to be signing off here. So this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off, and we'll have a sign off with Brooks
Hagen. Thank you very much, James. Wonderful conference, wonderful evening tonight on As You Wish Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew.
And our other co-host, or tri-host, or whatever you call it, because this is probably the first one this has been tried, to have three hosts at the same time, we've got Mel Fabregas.
And this is Mel Fabregas, wishing you to be well, and remember to be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
All right, have a great evening, and watch the skies, because it's going to get real busy in the next couple years.